Good evening. Welcome to Comic-Con Stars. Oh. Good evening and welcome to Comic-Con Stars. Great to be with you on a hot August night, calling in from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. We're going to have a great show tonight. First of all, Dave Atwell, are you in the house with us?
Yes, sir, I am. How are you doing this evening?
Dave!
Doing just great. Yeah, Dave's here, and that was the voice of none other than our most regular, Greg Bo Watson. Greg Bo, how are you doing tonight?
What's up, everybody? How y'all doing?
We're great.
Doing real
Dave,
good. Good to have you aboard.
Yeah. Dave, you got your cigar out?
Good to be with you guys.
Are you waiting just a little?
No, truth be told, I'm still at work. If you could hear that beeping in the back, that's a forklift driving behind me. So, you know, us riders live below the poverty level, so we've got to find jobs to keep the lights on. So here I am slinging hash live for everybody.
Exactly. Well, we're glad to have you here. Glad to have you. Papa Stroh is unable to attend because he is locked up in a steel cage match in Cross Lanes, West Virginia. So,
sweet.
That's what happens when you're bad.
Yeah,
you get
awesome.
Locked up in a steel cage. And he told me he wasn't going to do one of those for a while, huh? But he's there and having a great time. He sends his best. And so we're on our own tonight. We're gonna have a great time. So, Greg Bo, you were just at the Soda City Comic Con in beautiful sunny Columbia, South Carolina.
That is correct.
Yeah. Tell us about it.
It was it was a really good show. Those guys put on a great show. The crowd was, the place was packed. It was a beautiful show. We did really well. Got to meet a lot of our longtime fans and made a lot of new fans. So that's always good. But it was a really good show. I mean, people were cosplaying all over the place, and we had a really good time.
Well, that's good. You were there with Misty, is that correct?
That is correct. She was, and she cosplayed on the first day. She was Supergirl Bizarro, or Bizarro Supergirl. And the next day, she was Jedi Sleeping Beauty.
Describe that. That's interesting.
Well, what she did is she did a mashup, man. She did like a Sleeping Beauty, you know, Aurora from Disney, you know, The Crown. And up at the apex of the crown, she put the Jedi symbol. And then she had a pink lightsaber that lights up, makes the sounds, and all that kind of stuff. And in all the pictures that she was taking with the fans, she'd be leaned up against them while she was asleep. So it was pretty cool.
That's great. A pink lightsaber, huh?
Yeah, she's creative, I tell you.
I bet those are hard to find. Wow.
Oh, now, sure to have that one custom made.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, that's something else. Yeah, she is the wizard when it comes to cosplay.
Yeah, it even had the gold to match her crown. The handle was gold and made like with the same material that her crown was made out of. So she pulled it off. It was great.
Well, that's good. Glad to hear that. Now, as you've been a guest on our show a number of times, we have done various things. We've talked about American Hook Catch as Catch Can Wrestling.
Right.
Remember, we had John Strickland on, and then we have talked about, you know, it was interesting. We were out doing caricatures the other night, and a couple came by from Gilbert, South Carolina. And the first thing they said was, well, we're from Gilbert. You don't know where that is. And I said, well, excuse me, the World UFO Welcome Center is right there. And they just busted out laughing. And they said, how do you know about that? I said, who couldn't know about that? I mean, in fact, that's how the idea. What?
It's the World UFO Welcome Center. I mean, you know, I mean, who wouldn't? You're right. Who wouldn't know about that?
That's exactly right. And in fact, that episode, Greg Bo, I'm going to give you credit. That episode started my quest for putting together a paranormal UFO Con, which became CryptoCon in Charlotte on October the 1st. So you get credit for a lot of things. You introduced me to Darth Bill, who introduced me to Sam DeLoach, who introduced me to Michael Cook today, who's a big-time cryptid researcher. In fact, next week, we've got Mississippi McQueen and Tornado Bait, and then the next week we've got Sam DeLoach talking about how to actually hunt for Bigfoot, and then we've got we're going to have Michael Cook, the cryptid researcher, tell us all about what happened at CryptidCon up in Kentucky, and he's going to tell us a little bit about Point Pleasant, West Virginia, the homeland of the Mothman, because the Mothman Festival is going to be coming right up. So why don't we all ought to go to the Mothman Festival, don't you think?
Oh, that would be awesome, especially since I actually, in one of the comics I did for Zenoscope Entertainment, was based on the Mothman, so I got to draw the Mothman, so it would be fun to go see that.
Well, it really would, and if we can get up there, that would be great. If not, or if I can get up there, I'd like to take at least a piece of your artwork to show everybody. I think they'd love it. I really do.
Sure.
Yeah.
I'd be happy
Well, thank you very much. That's all the way up in Point Pleasant, West Virginia, and that's quite a hike. That's north of Lord. That's up there in Wheeling, St. Clairsville territory. It's a long, long way, but it might be worth it. I found out there is a haunted hotel in Point Pleasant.
Really?
Yes, there is. It was Michael Cook. He's going to be staying there for the Mothman Festival. And I think for some reason, I think the Mothman Festival, it's on September. It turns out it's the week of Florence Comic Con. So go to that. But I'd love to go up there sometime and see it. Now, you're going to be at Florence Comic Con, aren't you?
I am. I'm going to be there. I believe this is going to be my fourth or fifth year as a featured guest artist down at Florence Comic Con. It's they do a big soiree every year. It's a really good show. It's run by Gay Ham. Previously, it was run by Denny Stevenson, and rest his soul, bless him. He passed away almost a year ago, back in December. So this is going to be the first Florence Comic Con without Denny. So it's going to be bittersweet, but I am really looking forward to the show.
Yeah, you know, this Comic-Con world is a very small world. A simple conversation with you on Comic-Con Stars got CryptoCon started. Well, my first Comic-Con came as a result of a conversation with Denny Stevenson.
Yeah, he's a great guy. Really great guy. Really innovative on the Southern con scene in particular, because, John, you and I both know how difficult it is, starting a con from the ground up and getting all the buzz around it. And, people all over the world, comic fans know of Florence because they've heard Florence Comic Con. And taking a small town in South Carolina like Florence and turning it into a big con like that was unreal.
Well, it is, and it's amazing to me. Florence has got 37,000 people. That's what the census says. And Florence is the second largest Comic-Con in South Carolina, behind South Carolina Comic-Con up there in Greenville. And it's just amazing.
Right.
It's still larger than Captain's in Charleston, which is a wonderful event. I wouldn't miss it for the world.
Oh, I love Captain's Con.
Mike Campbell and the guys down
there do a good job.
Oh yeah, they're just great to us, and last year we brought Papa Stro Maestro down, and he had a great time, and TV ended up all over him on Sunday. It was great.
I bet so. He is he's a character with those kinds. One of the few times I get to leave my table during one of those shows, I always have to make a beeline over to wherever Stro's at and sit there and have a catch up chat session there for a while. He's a great guy.
Well, I'm going to solve that problem for CryptoCon. I'm going to put you right next to him.
Awesome.
so, So you can sit there and be Greg Bowe and just turn and talk to Papa Stroh. It'll be just perfect, you know.
That'd be great. Go ahead. Oh yeah. Well, I'll tell you, any chance I get to sit at a con and talk with Stroh and we get to sit there and cut up a little bit, it's always good.
Absolutely it is. And I will tell you this, and I'll let everybody know, that today, thanks to Papa Stroh, I spoke with Sunshine from the Glow Girls. And I will leave it at that. We will hopefully have an announcement coming up sooner than later. But it will be great to I've got another conversation with her next week, and we will see what happens. We'll leave it at that. But if something good happens, Greg Bowe, I'll Dave and Papa Stroh will know. We'll let you know too if something good can happen. So we'll keep our fingers crossed.
Oh, that'd be awesome.
Normally like to.
I would love to be on that show.
Well, we'll see what we can do. She's interested in the Carolinas now because Charlotte is such a wrestling town, and so is Raleigh, and so is Columbia. You know, a lot of people forget
right.
that they did a lot of TV tapings in Columbia.
That's true, they did.
That's right. And they used to do them all in Charlotte, and then they got to where I was told, I think Jim Crockett, the third, he told me they finally ended up doing some in Columbia just because the shows were so different. And the crowds were really good, so they were able to – I think they did them at WIS-TV down there, something I'll have to check on. But, yeah, it's really wrestling's all over the Carolinas. Charlotte is the hub. And she was talking about hopefully coming to Charlotte sometime in the next 6 months or so. So we'll let everybody know if that materializes. It will be a lot of fun. Now, I do want to remind everybody that at Crypticon, the prelude or the beginning of Crypticon is going to be a night with Papa Stroh Maestro. That's going to be at Sticky Fingers Rib House over there in Concord Mills. He's going to be there at 6 p.m. Yeah, he's going to do a Q&A. He's going to tell us a lot of stories. He's going to tell Matt Man live. I can't wait. So it'll be a lot of fun. And, of course, I'm inviting everybody. I'm inviting Dave Atwell. I'm inviting Greg Bowe and Misty. I want everybody to be there. We're going to have a grand time, and I'm going to be jumping on Facebook to find some of those Charlotte wrestling fans and make sure that they know about Papa Stroh. I believe they would enjoy seeing him, don't you?
Oh, most certainly. Most certainly.
Oh, and you know what? We need to let John Strickland know. Maybe John can get up from – he's in Greenville, right?
No, he's here in Easley, South Carolina. He's not too far from me.
Oh, okay, great. Well, we'll have to let him know and see if he might want to come up there if it works into his schedule. So that would be a lot of fun. Now,
yeah, I'm
Greg
sure he'd
Bowe,
love
I've
that.
I've been dying to ask you a question here on the show. You told me that this past weekend, I believe, some strange things happened in the ring with one Crippler, Brett Watson, and is she his manager?
Yes. Mickey May.
Tell us.
Manager and fiance.
Yeah, well, she's a lovely young lady, and they make a great-looking couple, but they can do some dastardly things in the ring. Why don't you fill us in? That was one of the best stories I've ever heard.
Well, it was a match between for the last couple of weeks up there at APW, American Pro Wrestling in Spartanburg, South Carolina,
mm-hmm.
This wrestler named BB Naturally. And I think old Adrian Street, you know, he likes to get a little feminine in his dress. So for the last couple of weeks, they've been accusing Mickey May of using her pocketbook to help Brett get over in some of his matches and win. Of course I haven't seen a pocketbook get swung, but you know, that's just me. But everybody's claiming she's been swinging the pocketbook.
She had a pocketbook in Wilmington. It's a nice looking pocketbook, and I asked her straight out,
yes,
have you ever used this in the ring? She says, I use it to carry my pocket change. That's what she said to me.
That's exactly right.
Continue on.
That's exactly right.
Pocket change.
So her pocket change. And so bottom line is they got in there, and BB Naturally has been kicking up such a fuss that somehow or another he got the board of directors at American Pro Wrestling to sign Mickey May up to a match to wrestle BB Naturally, because BB wanted old to get revenge, and I guess BB was just wanting to take Michaela out, which really wasn't fair because, you know, Michaela, she's a manager. She's not a wrestler. So she got in there, though. But let me tell you what, buddy, she held her own. That bell rang. She threw BB right into the turnbuckle. It went for a little while, and then all of a sudden over in the corner, you know, BB was going to have Michaela's purse. BB had got Michaela's purse from ringside. So he's walking up trying to close it on Michaela. Luckily, Brett slid in between them. And this was a thing of beauty. Brett's a member of a group called the Legends with Buckshot Carter and Chuck Sloan. Mm-hmm. And Buckshot and Chuck and Johnny Danger came out. The ref turned around and looked at them for a minute. Brett turns around and pulls one of the old Midnight Express moves. Pops Michaela. Michaela falls. He grabs the ref. BB's holding the purse. And he tells the ref, "Hey, BB just hit Michaela with the purse." So BB gets disqualified, and guess who got the win? Mickey May. So Mickey May actually has a win on the APW wrestling books.
Well, I think that's
fantastic.
So I
thought that was kind of cool.
I mean, this is like the days of Bobby Riggs and Billie Jean King.
Oh, yeah.
So, 1,000%. Got a one-game win streak.
And it reminded me of one of the old Midnight Express matches when the Midnight Express would go up against the Rock and Roll Express, and it'd be a First Blood match. And for those of you who don't know, in a First Blood match, the first person who bleeds that the referee sees is bleeding, that person loses. So what would happen is, you know, Robert Gibson might be wrestling, might be fighting outside the ring with Dennis Condrey, and hit Dennis, and then Dennis get bloody. Well, Jim Cornette would go over there and smear his finger across Dennis's forehead, get the blood, then run in there and throw it on Ricky Morton's forehead, and then get the ref's attention, and then the ref would award the match to the Midnight Express. So it was kind of a classic schmize, so I was proud of them. They did a good job.
Well, that's great. I forgot about those matches. I mean, I remember I talked last night. We were on WCW Retro, and when we go do the old school match, I recounted. It was great. I don't know. You'll probably remember this because do you remember Aldo Bogni, Bronco Lubitsch, and George Two Ton Harrison?
Yes.
And it was the first time they had put a Battle of the Bullies on a Saturday afternoon wrestling television show, and they wrestled Rip Hawk and Swede Hansen. And now you talk about four guys that are tough and know how to wrestle, and George Two Ton Harrison outside. And I remember, you know, what was great about it is Rip Hawk pile-drived Bronco Lubitsch, the shorter guy, who then, you know, Bronco became a referee, a notorious referee,
right?
Did he not? That's right. He really knew what he was doing. So
yes,
It was all crazy and everything. And then it was a double disqualification because that led to the match the next week at the Greenville Coliseum. Well, it wasn't really a coliseum back then, was it? It was more like a small sports arena.
Are you talking about in Greenville, South Carolina?
That little thing. Yeah.
Oh, used to call it Greenville's little brown box. And it was Memorial Auditorium. Greenville Memorial Auditorium.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, that was one of the biggest
places
in the Carolinas for wrestling. I mean, they had some good shows.
Because,
they had some TV tapings there.
Right, because that wasn't a whole lot different than what used to be Charlotte Park Center, which is now the Grady Cole Center.
Right.
You know, and they used to have wrestling there every Monday night, much to the dismay of my parents, who had to drive me from Morganton, North Carolina, to Charlotte, North Carolina, to see J.C. Dykes and the Infernos take on Johnny Weaver and George Becker. I mean, three Monday nights in a row. And, I mean,
Johnny Weaver. I love Johnny Weaver. We went to the beach one time. With Johnny Weaver, and it was the funniest thing in the world because all weekend all I wanted to do was just talk to him about wrestling, and he didn't want to talk about wrestling. He just wanted to talk about NASCAR. He was watching NASCAR at the time and real big into it. That's all he wanted to talk about. And then we all went out on the beach the next day, and you want to see, here I was, a grown man, and I felt like a kid all over again because Johnny Weaver comes walking out on the beach, and he's wearing his old Mid-Atlantic wrestling trunks to swim.
Wow.
Going, oh, man, that's great. But you know, talking about Greenville Auditorium, Greenville Memorial Auditorium, it was a famous place in pro wrestling because one of the famous things that happened there was that's where Ole Anderson got stabbed.
Remind us about that story.
Well, I can't remember who it was they were wrestling. But I know Ole was on his way to the back, and it was a real hot finish. I mean, and for those who don't know what that is, that's when the crowd is just all angry and going bazonkers about the finish of the match. And Ole was walking in the back. A guy pulled out a hawk-billed knife and cut Ole wide open. And they had to drive him straight. I mean, they had to get him to the emergency room forthwith. And it was all over, like, Pro Wrestling Illustrated and TV shows and everything else. And, it was a shoot. It really happened. And I know the lady who drove Ole to the hospital.
Wow.
So,
well, he certainly was covered.
Ole's a tough old bird. And lives down in Toccoa, Georgia. Oh, talking about last Saturday night, you know that about Brett and Mickey May, you know, and the schmoz ending that I thought was just genius to give her a win, so therefore she didn't have to go through with a full match with BB, you know, with her not being able to wrestle or trained as a wrestler. Brett pulled like triple duty that night. He came out when the Legends were having their match. The Legends over at American Pro Wrestling now have a new thing that any of the wrestlers, if they're tired of losing their matches, if you pay the Legends, they'll take out your opponent before the match begins. And so to show off what was going to happen, the Legends wrestled a six-man tag team match, and one of the other wrestlers on the other team, and you're going to laugh when I say the name of this wrestler, because I do every time I hear it, but the guy's name is Twinkle Toes. Twinkle Toes.
Nah.
So as soon as Buckshot Carter got the pin, Chuck got the pin, out from the back rolls in the Crippler, throws on a double wrist lock, steps on the guy's head, breaks the guy's arm. Snap, right there in the middle of the ring.
Well, so the first arm he's broken.
No, it's a long line of, he might as well have bones all over his wall for his little career. But so, he got out there and he broke the guy's arm. Well, that caused a big stir. And then Brett wrestled a new young wrestler named Chase Loveless. And that one, if you get to see the video of it, it's online. That is, that was a five-star match. I mean, Brett was hitting German suplexes. He did a, John, you'll love this, he did a standing Indian deathlock into a bridge. And the crowd just got quiet.
Really?
And there was just gasps. Oh, yeah, it's beautiful.
So he's just bridging right. Oh, my Lord, that's incredible.
Yeah, imagine standing up in an Indian deathlock, getting it wrapped in, and instead of dropping down to your back, he just completely bridged and landed on the back of his head and held it in that position. Oh, that's beautiful.
That is amazing. That is truly amazing. Wow. Yeah, he's becoming a man of he's a man of 999 holds. Is that correct?
That's pretty much the truth. Yeah, he's a walking wrestling encyclopedia.
Mm-hmm. He'll have to work hard to get that last one and match Lou says, but we'll call him.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Holds. Yeah, you can tell him I said that.
I'll tell him he'll love it because you know his training lineage goes back through up through Lou Fez, so he'll be truly honored.
Yeah, just remind him of that. I hadn't thought about that. I just did. Yeah, he's great. I can't wait to come up to Spartanburg. We're gonna do some. We'll probably do a Comic-Con Stars Facebook Live back there and interview him and Jay Eagle and a few other people when we come. Yeah, and of course you're gonna have to be there. Yeah, it'll be.
Well, you know,
a lot of fun. Yeah,
it'll be fun. Yeah, we'll get Jay Eagle. We'll get Brett. We'll get Chuck. We'll get Buck on there. It'll be good.
Mm-hmm. Right. Now, tell everybody, a lot of people don't know a lot about Chuck Sloan. You introduced me to him at the Charlotte Comic Con, and
right. You
introduced him to Maestro, and we were all pleased to meet him. And I, you know, he and I have connected on Facebook. But tell everybody a little bit about him, or we'll get him on here one night for sure.
Yeah, we ought to get him on here one night. He did an interview today. I was listening to him. He's a good guy. He's kind of him and Brett and Buck Carter all wrestled together. Chuck as a group called the Legends. And Chuck, he was training wrestlers for WCW. He was he wrestled in the NWA, the WWF. He was talking today. He had a match against King Kong Bundy and took the five count. You know, he got pinned with, you know, how Bundy used to do, count to five. So, so yeah, he's had some pretty big matches and done some pretty big things in his career.
Yeah, that's great. Well, we look forward to having him on here.
Yeah. Yeah, he enjoyed meeting
one
you guys.
Yeah, that was great. I was glad that he came to the Charlotte Comic Con. And when you were talking about Heat there at the end and someone getting cut open,
yeah. Now
you do know that when Gorgeous George, who invented the concept of the heel, who is Papa Stroh's uncle, you know that when he won his world championship belt, the AWA Boston belt, as it was called back then, from Don Eagle, that they kept him in the ring for about a minute and a half because the crowd was so mad. Don Eagle was, you know, tore into that referee. But what happened was when they finally got Gorgeous George out there and they had two cops in front of him and two cops behind, somebody ended up, they stuck him with a knife. And so, I mean, he had his share of that. You know, he could generate some heat. I think the Andersons might have learned a little bit from him about how to generate heat because, you know,
I think everybody learned from Gorgeous George. I mean, Gorgeous George was definitely the forerunner of the showmanship in particular. Now, you know, the guy could get in there and he could actually throw down and he could wrestle. But he's one of the first ones that really – I mean, there was showmanship here, showmanship there. But he took it to a new level that really, you know, opened the gateway to the, you know, modern-day wrestling.
Absolutely, it did. And what I liked, I mean, I hate to keep dwelling on this. Everybody, by the time I pass away, everyone's going to know this is my favorite match. But you talk about ring sense and knowing where you are, knowing where your opponent is and what your body is doing. I'll never forget, and everybody needs to go. It's on Comic-Con Stars, and he will link to the match. You know, he's got Don Eagle in a step-over toehold. And he looks back, and the rope's about 2 feet from him. He looks back again. And he bounces, and then he just basically falls on top of Don Eagle and pins him for the surprise three count. And it was a surprise to Don Eagle. He didn't know what to do except be pinned. And that's what made everybody so mad. But it was Gorgeous George's great ring sense that allowed him to see, well, I'm just 2 feet away. I can bounce and just drop on this guy, and he'll never get up for three. And so that's what happened. So that was really, really smart of him, great ring sense, great wrestling. Of course, Papa Stroh was a great wrestler.
He was a ring general. That's right, he does. And you would call that being a ring general or a mat technician.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly right. So, yeah, we've had some great wrestling people on Comic-Con Stars. I want to get Jimmy Valiant on here very soon because he's got a lot of great things. Yeah, he was at Cape Fear. He's got a lot of great things going on. In fact, it's a week from Sunday. He's got the inductions into his 25th wrestling class. They're all going to graduate, and it's going to be a lot of fun. And Dr. John is supposed to be up there because Dr. John is on that banner along with Papa Stroh, who was on a banner 5 years ago. It's quite an honor to be there. you know, it's going to play havoc with me in the Florence Comic Con, but it's kind of a once in a lifetime thing, you know, and to be up there. Yeah, I know. So I'll have a replacement for me there with Cody, but of course Papa Stro will be right next door in the next booth. So just if you do me a favor, make sure Stro's all right, because I won't be there. Is that all right? Can you do that for me?
I'll try not to get him in too much trouble, but you know, when the two of us get together.
I know that's the way it is. So anyway, you were telling us a little bit earlier that you drew the Mothman. Can you tell us, for people that aren't, people who aren't familiar with that, tell us a little bit about it, a little bit about the plot, who you did it for, how you did it. Just tell us a little bit about it, because I find that very interesting that you drew one of my favorite characters in the cryptid world.
Well, basically what I got to do is I got to do the cover for that. I've been doing a lot of the covers for Zenoscope. That way I can do a lot more, you know, during the month. And basically it was for, if I'm not mistaken, I believe Van Helsing versus Frankenstein was the name of the book. It's Van Helsing versus Frankenstein, put out by Zenoscope Entertainment. It's a comic book series. And so in Van Helsing versus Frankenstein, it's the same Van Helsing, by the way, that currently is running on Sci-Fi Network, the television series Van Helsing.
Okay.
It's Van Helsing versus Frankenstein, and they ran into like some other monsters during the story, and one of the monsters that made an appearance was the Mothman. So I was delighted when they called me up and they asked me, hey, you know, are you available to do a cover for Van Helsing versus Frankenstein? I was like, yeah, because I thought, man, drawing Van Helsing or drawing Frankenstein, either one would be great. But when they came back to me and told me it was the Mothman, you know, I basically did the Snoopy dance, because I'm a big Mothman fan myself.
Oh, I am too. Well, that's great. Now, how long ago did you do that?
Gosh, it has been the Mothman issue. I'm going to guess it was about 6-8 months ago. It's hard for me to keep up, because when I do a cover or when I do a book, usually it's several months or more before it ever goes to the stands, because once I get finished, it's got to go to the colorist, the letterer, then they've got to promote it, and then they've got to get them printed and then sent, and then they come through Diamond Distribution and down to the stores. So it's a tenuous process. So half the time, luckily, my fans on my Facebook page know when my book's out, you know, before I do a lot of times. So I'm going to say about 6-8 months ago I did that one.
Okay. Well, are you ready for my Mothman story? It's a true Mothman story.
Yeah. You think I'm going to pass on a Mothman story?
Now, Dave Atwell, I want you to listen to this. It's a very important story to me. All right. But no. It's
going to be Bigfoot all over again, isn't it, Dave?
No.
Dude,
no,
I'll tell you what. I try my level best. I honestly want to play nice. You know, my report card used to always say, excellent student but has hard time getting along with other kids.
Well, I believe
especially when they talk about Bigfoot. Especially when they talk about Bigfoot.
Or Anna Nicole.
I know you, buddy.
And Dave
or
Dave
Anna Nicole, that is right.
Dave has something against Anna Nicole, and I don't know. He might blow up here in a little bit, but anyway, let me tell you the story.
Yeah.
I was teaching at UNC Pembroke. I was teaching computer science, and this was, it was, I guess, the fall of 1999. And I had, of course, read John Keel's The Mothman Prophecies. I'd read it. And so I was in my office. The semester had just begun. And a young man came in, and he was talking about how he's having problems in my classes. It was the intro to Excel class. And, you know, it's like hard to believe someone's going to have a problem with that, with intro to Excel, but we were talking a little bit.
And you looked closer at him, and he was the Mothman.
No. You know, here's the story. I said, so where are you from? It's like what I do when I'm selling caricatures. The first thing I want to know is, where is someone from so I can see if I can identify with them? So I said, so where are you from?
Yeah,
he
good.
Said,
yeah.
I'm from Point Pleasant, West Virginia. I said, wow.
I would have loved to have seen the look on your face.
Right. It was like total surprise. I mean, I said, are you? I said, really? He said, yeah, I'm really from Point Pleasant. I said, that is so awesome. And he cut me off. He said, I know you love the Mothman, don't you? I said, yes, I do. Yes, I do. Well, let me tell you something. You know the couple that was getting on in the car on the football field? I said, yeah. He said, that was my parents.
What?
I said, no. I said, no. He said, yeah. He said, I'll prove it to you. I said, please do. Please do. So 2 weeks later, he came back into my office, and he brought me, held together by a rubber band, a first edition of the Mothman Prophecies by John Keel. And he said, my mother said she doesn't want this anymore, and it's yours. And, I mean, that's pretty serious stuff. It was a first edition by that little old publisher that did it. So I said, well, that's great. Tell her thank you. And he said, well, you'll get to thank her in person because when we have homecoming in 2 weeks, they're coming down to visit me. I said, we're making an appointment. And I said, I think I must have said 3 o'clock on Friday. And I completely forgot. And I was getting ready to leave my office on that appointed Friday afternoon. And in walked this boy with his parents.
Why am I starting to smell that this guy got an A in your class?
No. Actually, not at all. It's got a very sad ending. So what happened was I met his parents, and they were extremely nice, but the dad said, yeah, that was us. And that was the most frightening thing that has ever happened. We will never forget it, and it was horrible. And, you know, you got two 45-year-olds that look, they're nicely dressed. The kid's, you know, pretty nice upscale kid. And, you know, people aren't going to just wander in off the street and tell you a story like that. And I said, well, give me the details. And they told me, they recounted it. There were a few additional details that they had not given John Keel. I said, well, thank you very much. And then Mom piped up. She said, did you get my present? I said, yes, ma'am, thank you so much. I got it at my house. And she said, well, I just don't like anything about that event around me now. And you know, that kind of had a ring of the truth that something had happened to him.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, what happened is the boy quit coming to class and he basically dropped out of school. Never got back in touch with him. He never got back in touch with me. It was very odd, but they delivered the book to me through the son. They came down and said, it was terrible. We feel psychologically injured, and it was frightening, and we don't want anything in our house that relates to the Mothman. And then the kid kind of disappears on me. So that's my Mothman story, and it rang true. I didn't believe.
Well, he disappeared on you. How many times did you ask him about the Mothman?
We never talk. I mean, I wouldn't ask about that in class, and I wouldn't just say, "Hey, why don't you come back by my office and let's talk about the monster?" You know, that's not exactly the kind of conduct that a professor should have. But I always, you know, he'd come by and talk about
it. Dr. John following him out to his car every day. I would, John. I'm not blaming you because I would too.
Well, it was an odd sensation being around those people. They were very serious, and you can tell when people are messing with you and all that. But that's my Mothman story, and it really rang true, and it was scary. I mean, it was about like, and I know you guys are going to think I'm crazy. But tonight we were in Plyler Park, and I'm going to post the pictures. There was a very odd sky, and some kind of a thing went by and just disappeared in midair. About 25 people saw it. Some people took pictures. It was an unidentified flying object. I don't know if it was the traditional UFO, but it was truly an unidentified flying object to us. It was like daylight. It was just really strange. So, you know, odd things do happen. Dave Atwell, don't you think odd things happen?
Well, yeah, odd things happen. Now, going on your Mothman story, though, I'd be more apt to buy that story because it sounds more, what's the word I'm looking for, doable, if you will. What it is, I can't, hey, going back to the Bigfoot thing, if you're standing in front.
Back to Bigfoot.
And I'm sorry to be picking on the foot, but I mean, if you're standing toe-to-toe with something that's 8 feet tall, hairy and smelly, and you're standing in the middle of the woods unarmed and have nothing but a glow stick, I would dare say you are probably going to walk out of those woods a changed person. So, again, one of my questions, these guys who run out of the woods going, guys, guess what? I don't know. I think if that happened to me, if aliens actually came down and ET came into my house and ate all of my Reese's Pieces and said he wanted to phone home, I think I would help him get home and then not tell a staggering soul about it because of the fact that it would screw me up so bad that out of just natural instinct, I would just keep my mouth shut, you know, almost a shell shock type thing. You know what I mean? So,
yeah.
Of course, walk into any shrink's office with Bigfoot PTSD, see how long that goes. But nevertheless.
Now, Dave, come on. That's a low blow right there.
Doc, it all
show
started when
up,
I was a kid. I saw Bigfoot. And every time somebody the size of, you know, with a fifth size 15 shoe walks up, I get nervous. What do I do? Yeah, but I mean, I would imagine,
show us on the
once
map,
again,
man, where Bigfoot jumped out and scared you.
Yeah, you know? So, I mean, with a story like that, I could see where if they actually had encounters with this Mothman thing, as they grow older, I'm sure the experience does not. As a matter of fact, I would dare say the experience probably kind of increases because the older you get.
I agree.
You know what I mean? The more you rehash it, the
yep.
more you try to rationalize it. So, you know, that being said, I could see where these people would be like, hey, I want this stuff out of my life. I don't care what I got to do, you know. So that's a lot more plausible to me than the guy who comes out with, you know, hey, you know, I saw the Mothman and, you know, he gave me a couple Jolly Ranchers and told me to stay out of this neck of the woods. You know what I mean? I just.
Well, no, I know exactly what you mean because, I mean, seriously, Dave, if you were out in the middle of the woods and you bumped into Bigfoot and you saw Bigfoot in a clearing, are you going to take off chasing after him? No. You're going to either dive and be paralyzed with fear behind the nearest large object you can hide behind, or you are going to become an Olympic sprinter.
Oh, yeah.
Very quickly.
And as for leaving a scent, that will be no problem either on my behalf. The hounds will have no problem picking up on my draws, let me tell you, because they will be full, baby.
Well,
but,
you know, and that's the truth. Anybody that comes out and wants to publicize their story, that is not a very believable thing, but somebody that comes out and calls the sheriff's department and doesn't start seeking fame, fortune, and the newspaper, there's a good chance there's more to it than
right.
Yeah,
when we were talking about Bigfoot before, you know, and I the one I was on, and you know, basically, you know, we were talking about, you know, could there be a creature that large that's out there. And yes, I do believe there could be, but when I sit there and watch, you know, some of the stuff, yeah, I mean, you know, some of these shows on television, I mean, you know, come on. I mean, they're just going out into like yard somewhere into the woods and saying, hey,
mm-hmm.
we got a show for you. Pass. I mean, really. And,
right.
But yeah, I do believe that there could, I mean, because large creatures, large mammals are being found all the time. I mean, much less you know, I mean, much more frequently, little, you know, smaller animals and smaller species. But, and Dave, you said it, you know, there's new things being found in the ocean all the time, and that we can understand.
Right.
But, you know, there are things that are being found out there. And, you know, and I asked, you know, I asked Darth Bill about it one time, and he had said, you know, about, you know, skeletons and things like that, you know, and, you know, being found in the woods or a dead carcass or whatever. And he was telling me how he's been a hunter for X number of years and, you know, basically all his life. And, you know, the deer is out there, and we know the deer are there, but he's never, he said, you know, I've never walked upon a dead deer or a deer skeleton. And I got to thinking about it, you know, and I've never been a big hunter, but I've been in the woods a lot. And I'm like, you know.
Yeah, but I've seen a whole hell of a lot more dead deer than I have dead Bigfoots in my time, whether it's on the back road or in the woods or in the middle of Dodger Stadium. I've seen a lot more dead deer than I have seen dead Bigfoot. Sorry, here I go again. You guys drop the match. Here it is. Four arm ways. God, everybody stop this madness.
We seriously need to invest in getting a Dave a microphone he can drop.
Here I am, a Bigfoot hater. You know what I mean? It's just a matter of time before we get, you know, Bigfoot Lives Matter, and it's all because of me.
They're going to be picketing you.
But wait. Well, Dave,
they're
going to
come
Dave,
out
wait.
They're going to be picketing you.
I know, but Dave, wait. There are already five towns in Western Virginia that have created a sanctuary for Bigfoot. So Bigfoot lives do matter. You're wrong.
Yeah.
They've already done
it. They matter all right.
And Atwell, you
good
better give up
grief
any hope of ever driving through one of those states, buddy. They probably got your picture up all over the place.
Yeah.
Now.
Well, you know, it'll be just my luck. I'll be driving through there solo, won't have nobody with me, and one of these Bigfoot will be out there hitchhiking. And I'll legitimately have a Bigfoot encounter, and then everybody's going to walk up to me and go, come on, Atwell, get out of here, play. Where'd you get the gorilla suit? No, man, he was hitchhiking. I'm serious. You know, I have a glow stick.
I so hope that happens.
Glow sticks, man. And you know what's funny, too? And this is wrong for me to say, so I hope nobody out there takes it personally. But I don't walk in the woods, even when I had a bad day at work and I want to walk out the woods and just have a little bit of solitude out there with the, you know, leaves falling. You don't go out in the woods without a firearm. At least when it's not here in North Carolina, you don't. Because
No. There's
a lot of things that crawl, climb, slither, jump, run, you name it, and got a lot of teethuses in their heads and a bad disposition. So you do not go in the woods anywhere around here without some type of firearm. So here's a guy, and I say guy, I don't mean that any particular person, but here's an individual who goes out on the pretense of hunting Sasquatch, a big-ass, unknown creature, and you're going to walk out there with glow sticks. But you're not going to have a Mossberg or a howitzer or a 50 cal. You're just going to go out there with your pocket full of glow sticks, the same thing my grandkids go out with when it's trick-or-treat time, and you're going to try to hunt these things down. Nay, I say, you can't tell me you honestly think the darn things are out there.
Well, they're going to attack it. They're going to attack it with love and show it love and give it a hug.
That's got to be like the Facebook Bigfoot.
That.
Yeah. The one that high fives the abominable
Bigfoot
snowman. Yeah.
Oh, is this like my
good
lizard man
grief,
that I
dude
created? This is going to raise money for the homeless shelters in Myrtle Beach. I guess that's what you're saying, is that, you know, everybody expects – no, I expect Bigfoot to be frightening. If I see Bigfoot, I am running the other way as fast as I can. I'm going to be the Olympic sprinter, Greg Bo. You will never have seen Dr. John run that fast in your life. I will be petrified. I don't want to see it.
Yeah, if I may add, though, and I brought this topic up last week about the Powerball. You know how the Powerball got up to $700 million.
Right.
And I was discussing with a friend that if you did indeed win this thing, you would almost have to crawl under a rock, because everybody, as Ted DiBiase used to say, everybody has a price. And even my dear old mom, who loves her oldest son to death, which at least I hope, Mom, I hope you're listening, but if you don't, I get it. She now has 700 million reasons to cut me in my sleep, okay? So when it comes down to winning the lottery like this, and we all have that core, maybe two or three guys, friends, people, moms, whoever, in our lives who we totally know we can trust. The ones that you really got the creepiest secret in the world to tell, they're the ones you know ain't going to say nothing about, all right? First off, you tell them. Then you go out and get an attorney, and you tell him, all right? So how is this akin to Bigfoot sighting? Well, glad you asked. What it is that if
Bigfoot,
you come,
Bigfoot won the Powerball, and that's when he went into hiding.
That's right, and he wanted to go under a rock, but he couldn't find one big enough because he's a Bigfoot. Okay. There has got to be, if I was to go out there and find, be it an alien or a chupacabra or a Bigfoot or like I always say, you're more likely to find an abdominal snowman instead of an abominable snowman. But nevertheless, you see those hanging out at the ballparks quite a bit. But if I walk out the door, and I'm even going to throw my wife under the bus here, and John, you've met my wife, Greg, you've met my wife, and she's a lovely lady. I could see him walking in this building and going, hey, hon, I saw a Bigfoot. She wouldn't be able to pack that fast if we were moving, okay? She would say, hey, you're out of your mind, all right? So I would have to find those one, two, or three people, and Dr. John, you'd probably be one of them. No offense.
I hope.
But I would say it to you, and why would I do that? Because the minute I say something out loud, all right, and here goes the conspiracy theorist in me. The minute I say something out loud, not only might I be chastised by society and people who were my friends before I saw this thing,
mm-hmm.
but who's to say that the government isn't out there and says, oh, crap, this nitwit actually saw it. We can't have him running his mouth, and then all of a sudden
right.
I get silkweeded. You see what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
I don't want the silkwood treatment. I got to run the Scotchman and get my beer. I don't want somebody throwing the high beams on me or running me off the road. So when these things happen, I mean, you really got to watch what you're doing on who you're talking to and who you're not talking to, because it beyond the social aspect of it, you might end up opening up a jar of worms, you can't get the worms back in, you know?
That's true. Well, you know, that's true. And for all the naysaying about Bigfoot and all of these anomalous creatures that we talk about, there clearly is a chance that they're true. And the way the government is, in fact, I was talking about that today with Michael Cook, of Cook Cryptid Research, who is an expert,
right.
and he always says that he's looking over his shoulder, because it's like, are we really expected to be treated fairly if we find this? If we really find something, we're getting ready to break a story, are we actually going to make it to the television station? You know, there
right.
are things,
right.
let's face it, there are, now here's the realistic conspiracy theorist coming out, Dr. John. There are things in this world that we need to keep quiet, that just cannot be told and all that. And if somebody runs
totally
up against
agree.
One of them, I mean, Edward Snowden obviously knows some things that has put the fear of God into the government. We know, Greg Bowe, do we know that?
Yep, we do.
Dave Atwell, do we know that? Yes
or
no?
Easy, easy. And I mean, going back to what, you know, what I said about Karen Silkwood, I mean, she knew that power plants were not being maintained correctly, and there was corners being cut and everything else, and then all of a sudden, she turns up missing, or not turns up dead, better yet. But, yeah, I absolutely. And even if you don't want to throw big government into it, let me throw corporate America into it. You know what I mean? Corporate.
That's exactly right.
You know, I probably trust corporate America less than do government.
Well, I mean, you guys are right. Yep. Because, you know, if the government has things that they do not want out and they do not want anybody to know, like a lot of the stuff about aliens, et cetera, you know, I hear people talk all the time, well, you know, it's 2017 and, you know, everybody, you know, every other movie or TV show is about an alien. I'm like, yeah, but you just look at the 2016 election. People couldn't handle that. Do you really think they're going to be able to handle the fact that aliens are down here, aliens are among us? I mean, no. I mean, all you have to do is watch the news at night and watch them interview these people, you know, about, you know, name the current vice president. And they're like,
George Washington.
I don't know. Yeah, George Washington. I mean, they have no idea. You know, the Civil War, who fought the Civil War? And then the United States and Canada. I mean, they don't know.
Yeah.
So if you think they're going to be able to handle hearing some of these things, and the government knows this, I mean, it would be mass chaos.
It would, easily, and I've said that often. People need to be protected from themselves sometimes, and
right. They do.
I just, and like I said, going back to what I was saying, you know, this going the opposite way of what I was saying. You walk out of the woods and you say, "Hey, I saw a Bigfoot," whereas you think all your friends go, "Ah, you nitwit, you know, you ain't got an air lick of sense," and walk away from you. What happens when they turn around, look at you, go, "No way, dude," and they all go running into the woods? You know?
Yeah.
Then you got mass hysteria. It's a whole different ball of wax. So,
and then they tell somebody, and they tell somebody else, or let's say your friends don't believe you, and then they're out. Let's say you tell those three friends. Those three friends go off in their other subgroup of friends. So, and then they tell a group of people about, man, this nitwit Atwell, he saw Bigfoot. And then those guys freak out, believe it. All right, they're telling everybody. They're getting online and telling everybody. They're going out in the woods. All of a sudden the woods behind your house are filled with, you know, hunters and people running around with glow sticks and, you know, big truck of glow sticks shows up, passing them out. And, I mean, but seriously, I mean, you know, it can cause mass hysteria. And, you know, it's just, it never surprises or amazes me the way the general public takes something. It's usually never the way you expected. And sometimes you just want to sit back and eat popcorn and watch, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Watch the reactions. Yeah. It was, I mean, you know,
I've often
watching.
You know, I've said the same thing about religious things. You know what I mean? For all the religions that there are in the world, imagine any actual biblical artifacts. I mean, the Dead Sea Scrolls have been around for 50-some-odd years, and there are still gads people out there to go, "Sand, so?" And what if there was, be it Muslim or Christian or Hindu or, you know, Buddhist or whatever religion out there, that some type of actual legitimate artifact, what would it do? You know, if we were to actually find the Ark of the Covenant and actually find the Ten Commandments that were in the Old Testament of the Bible, the basis of Christianity and Christian laws, what would it do to the world? You know what I mean? What would it do? Would it galvanize the Christian faith, or would it put us into a state of absolute power, so to speak, and before you know it, hey, we're running over the world, and all of a sudden respect for other religions is out the window? You know what I mean? It's
absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, you know, stuff like that. I mean, they have to watch. You know, I mean, I've thought about this oftentimes about like what's in the, you know, what's in the basement library or what of the Vatican. You know, things that have come to light throughout the centuries that would be at odds. And even though, you know, like now, right, you find you start thinking one way. You think the Earth's flat. Then you find out it's round, you know. But,
yeah.
You know, when it comes to religion and faith, if you find new evidence or new scripture or anything like that, of that nature, I mean, you're talking about a powder keg.
Exactly. And, you know, well, just speaking on what you were saying about the world being round, that's another one. I mean, you sail around the world, you come back and you go, guys, the world is round. I went around the world. And they look at you and go, I hear you.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and it takes another 100 years for it to actually catch on, you know.
Well, you know,
I mean,
you guys are making a point, and I want to relate two quick but related stories. George Bush was on Jimmy Fallon, you know, Bush, you know, George Jr., as I like to call him. And someone said,
right.
All right, are UFOs real? And he said, I can't tell you. Well, that right there is the worst possible. That's the worst possible answer a smart man could ever give, because if you say I can't tell you, that, you know, he can't say no. So he says that. So basically, he said yes. Well, so you got that, and then you've got the Shroud of Turin, which I believe is real. So either one of two things is true. Either it is a forgery, or the Vatican is so horrified that it got out. Now, if it was a fake, they would simply say, oh, it's a fake. Therefore, they've never said anything. Therefore, it must be real, because they are horrified that a real, legitimate artifact that people can start investigating what truly might be the body, you know, the body of Jesus and all that. I mean, they're clearly the lack of comment or the type of comment someone makes is just, it just makes things very clear. So,
misinformation has traditionally always been throughout history one of the top means of, you know, keeping things undercover, keeping things under wrap, or basically guiding people to think a certain way or keep people in line.
Oh, absolutely.
Misinformation can be more powerful than information at times.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same thing now. Where you just bash somebody's credibility and, you know, you see me knocking over a bank and you come out and you say, hey, I could swear that was Dave in there knocking over that bank. And when I hear, I go, yeah, well, you know, Dr. John and Greg, but those guys are always, you know, you know about their drug habits. You know that, right?
Have you heard them talking about Bigfoot?
Yeah, exactly. You know, these guys also believe in Bigfoot and the Mothman, right? Oh, well, Jesus, there was no way that was you in that bank then, Dave. Yeah, I mean,
you're right.
And the thing is going on what you were saying is the Vatican. Who's to say that if an actual religious artifact was found, the Vatican is standing back looking at it going, you know what? It looks real, but we can't roll the dice. You see what I'm saying? Because if somebody is, now let's say somebody says it is religious, it is legit, it is there. Because, I mean, really, who can actually tell whether the Ten Commandments is actually, because, I mean, nobody's really seen it. So it's just like the chalice on the Holy Grail. You know, who can actually, is it golden? Is it a clay cup? Does it have a stem on it? Is it round? Is it short? Is it tall? Nobody really knows. So there's a relative, though half of the room is going, hey, wow, it might just be the Holy Grail. The other half of the room is going, oh, crap, what if it ain't?
Exactly.
So, you know, what again would happen? What would happen to the religion in the event that an artifact was disproved? What, you know, what would be the fallout from it? So, I mean, again, there's another entity right there that we just came up with that could very well, and let me tell you something, everybody's dirty. Remember when I said everybody has a price?
Yeah.
Yes.
If you turn up and start bashing, or you start coming with some forensic evidence that Christian Artifact did not, you think the Vatican is going to sit on their hands? Nah.
Yep.
The guy that puts you out will have a funny hat and some robes on, but you're still going to get put out. So
it's not going to matter what they're wearing. You're going to be gone.
Yeah.
Or they will come with
it,
black
at least
suits.
They can say last rites over you as you go.
That's right. So, you know, it's just, I mean,
and
Dr.
John,
it is interesting.
You were saying, or it could be the Men in Black.
Yeah,
I was.
I mean, it makes sense.
Well,
no, I agree.
I'm a
firm believer in that.
I know the Men in Black are for real because someone has told me that they came to see them, and they told me why, and I realized that they were telling me the truth. Because they corroborated a piece of, you know, a story that I had heard a long time ago, far and away in a different galaxy, and they told me something that it'd be hard to deny with what I know. And yes, there are people that will show up and will tell you to keep quiet. Now, I don't know if they'll always have black suits on, but
well, Area 51, all right, and If I may, Area 51, I'm surprised I didn't think of this before. Area 51 is almost a perfect example of what I'm getting at. And here I go with Bigfoot bashing again.
Surprise, surprise.
How does it tie in like this? Obviously, there is something there. Okay? Now, be it aliens or be it mom's biscuit recipe, who cares? I don't know, but there's something there. Very, very, very sensitive and important. Is it sensitive to national security? I don't know. Is it important to religious security? I don't know. Is it something that somebody get their hands on and destroy the world? I don't know. But they being the government, have for years, not just during the Bush administration or the Ford administration, for years, they have fortified that area, okay? And still to this day, when you get some of these nitwit kids or some of these adventure, you know, thrill seekers and everything, try to sneak in some remote corner of the place, they're shut down quick. You know what I mean? It's no joke. So
you know what my theory is about Area 51?
What's that?
About Area 51?
Tell us.
I believe it's misinformation. I believe when back when the Roswell crash and everything else, I believe at one point there was stuff there. I don't believe there's anything that would be super ultra sensitive there now. I think it's already moved to an Area 53, 54, somewhere down the
decoy line.
And it's a decoy because everybody, that's all everyone talks about is Area 51. So where's the best place to hide something is in plain sight. So
right.
I believe it's at one of these secure air bases, et cetera. Come on. We know good and well that the government has installations that, you know, we have no idea where they're at. And then Area 51 is the world's most famous secret, you know.
Yeah.
It's like the most famous secret base on planet Earth.
You know, so there's got to be something there, you know, or was something, like you said. Now, of course, if the government has an actual 20 on Bigfoot, they'd have roped off some area somewhere else just like that. That's why nothing like that exists, because Bigfoot ain't out in the woods.
Well, who do you think helped them move, Dave? Who do you think helped them move from Area 51? That's so heavy.
Yeah, it was Bigfoot.
Well, you know, you're
and they worked
them
overtime
about,
without paying them. It's all labor disputes.
You know, you're talking
what
about
with, what is that jerky? What is that? Jack
messing
Link
with Bigfoot.
Yeah, messing with Bigfoot.
Jack Links.
Yeah. You know, you're talking about secret, really secret military installations. One that, kind of popped up about 2 years ago all over was Diego Garcia. And that's in the middle of the Indian Ocean. And the story goes is that one of the IBM employees that was on the Malaysian flight, whatever, that disappeared over the Indian Ocean actually sent some text messages out from the latitude and longitude of Diego Garcia. And there are places, you know, there are places to hide things in this world. That's one of them.
Right.
And, you know, and we what we know is that we don't know what's there. That's just like there in Cuba.
One of those places is Brett's room. You ain't going to find nothing in there.
The abyss.
You know, I mean, we've got places. The United States has places all over the world it can hide things. But then again, it seems quite interesting that they can't go over there and nab Edward Snowden. As powerful as we are, can't they go get it? And I'm not advocating that they do. I believe, if what he's saying is true, I believe I appreciate what he did. So call me a traitor too. But it's amazing to me that he can be sitting over there in Russia and we can't just nab him. We can nab somebody from anywhere in the world that we want to.
Yeah, but then you look at it this way, though, John. Look at it this way. If we did that, you know, sometimes that's why I'm saying goes along with what we're saying about, you know, misinformation hiding in plain sight. I mean, pretty much they've got him right where they want him. If they want to take him out, they could take him out. I think that there comes a point where you've got somebody checkmated and taking them out would bring more publicity and more questioning than leaving them in place. And he's got a little red mark trained on his head when he goes to the bathroom.
Oh yeah.
I mean, they can get him from anywhere.
This guy just don't run across the street for cigarettes anymore. His life is ruined, whether he's living in, you know, whether he's living in Russia or up in a mountain with a bunch of, you know, Tibetan monks. We're the United States. Outside of Israel, there ain't a whole lot of hiding from us. And I'll hand the Israelis that. They'll come find you, and they'll rub you out, and then they'll go on back to work. But, I mean, and there's a good chance, you know, because there are some, you know, drug dealers out there and that kind of stuff, these drug kingpins, that are actually worth more being on the loose because the feds are getting more
recon
information from them, being out there, you know, and mobile. So, okay, we don't bring in the one big guy, but we brought in 500 smaller guys. Fair trade. So, you know, there's no telling what they're getting from Snowden's location. And, hey, for all you know, it might be a handshake and a kind word between somebody in Russia and somebody in the United States with saying, hey, you've got this nitwit. He's as dangerous to you as he is to us. Because I've always said that about superpowers. Let me tell you something. Yeah. Russian folks don't want to die either. The Chinese don't want to die either. These North Koreans, they don't want to die either. Yeah. They ain't but one person want to die, and that's the fat guy running it.
I don't know, man. All those people in North Korea that are eating grass. So their life can't be that great.
Yeah.
It's not.
I mean, but
it's really not.
But I know what you're saying, you're 100% right.
You know, because who's to say that he's not over there right now and the Russian government and the United States government are getting more intel just for him being locked in his apartment every day? You know what I mean?
Yeah,
so,
exactly.
Well, he does have an internet connection. We know that. Now, come on. It's kind of like it's kind of like WikiLeaks. He's got an internet connection. Well, you know, and it's pretty easy to monitor it. So I mean, I think it's a fact that the governments know whatever they want to know. They really do.
Yep.
And a lot of popular media wants to portray it differently. It makes money for Huffington Post. It makes money for everybody.
Right.
So they can just do whatever they want. But But yeah, it's all interesting. It really is when you talk about Mothman, when you talk about Bigfoot, when you talk about Ed Snowden, when you talk about any conspiracy theory. I think we've got a lot. We've got a lock on that. There's obviously the chance that something's correct, but there's also the chance that it's not. And I think Dave even said it himself in a roundabout way that if you really do discover something that you shouldn't, somebody might come get you.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
I will take the position here on Comic-Con Stars that no matter how ridiculous anything is, you really don't know. You really don't. And I think that's probably the good thing about the world. We don't really know if some of these things are real or not. They sure are entertaining. They keep us guessing, and we keep moving along because it's a lot of fun. And like tonight's show has been great. We've had a lot of opinions. We've had some stories. Each one of us have had some stories, and it's been a lot of fun. We know that there are a lot of chances that things are real. Now, we will explore them on October 1st at Crypticon.
Yes.
We're going to have some people that know a lot about this information. And I'm looking for both of you are going to be there. Papa Stroh is going to be there. I mean, the Comic-Con Stars crowd is going to be there en masse and complete.
Right.
We're going to have some interesting guests. I'm trying to wrangle a couple more. I'm not going to say who, but I've got one that I've really got my bead on with my crosshairs. I really want him to be there because he has he's somebody that has really had a lot of interesting experiences. And I tend to believe him more than not. I really do. And that's pretty tough. But now, I guess it comes to closing time here. And I know I've got my things I'm going to promote. So first of all, I want to start with Dave Atwell. What have you got to promote?
Oh, wow. Well, of course, we've got Crystal Coast Con coming up at Mac Daddy's in Cape Carteret, North Carolina, and that will be on the 23rd of September. Make sure you get on out there and say hello. It's going to be a great show. And then following up, we've got October 1st, the CryptoCon, which I'm really looking forward to because I'll be hanging out with you guys. Finally, we look like we've come to the closing end where things are safe to get back in the water on the publishing side. And we're going to shoot for a last week of October release of my fourth book in the Hunger series. Working through the logistics of that and everything. And I tell you, and again, the quick plug for the books, Hunger series on Amazon, your bookstores, go look. Real easy name to look up, Dave Atwell. But, yeah, once we get that fourth book back out, it would be nice to be back in the saddle, as they say. And I'm really – you got it, man, right off to the sunset. I'm looking forward to it because and what better time to release your horror suspense novels than a week out of Halloween, the best holiday ever created.
It's the most wonderful time of the year.
Yeah, up behind Easter and Christmas, which for obvious reason has its importance. But Halloween for us knuckleheads is fantastic. So, yeah, that's my
pick. And Dave, just remember, you're only 10 days out from the Jacksonville Comic-Con.
Yes, sir. So you see how this is strategically done, don't you?
That's right.
Pretty neat.
Yep. So can we have a premiere party Friday night for you at the Jacksonville Comic-Con, get people together, let you talk all about it before we have the con on Saturday. Would you do that for us?
Hey, I would love it. Just as long as all the powers that be line up and the stars and the planets align and we're able to get this thing running. Because, you know, like I always say, it takes 3 months to write a book, but it takes to get it out. So, yeah.
That's awesome, right?
Well, look, Dave, thank you for that. And we're going to support you all we can. At CryptoCon, at Jacksonville Comic Con, and North Myrtle Beach. Now, Greg Bowe, what have you got? What are you going to plug tonight?
Well, first and foremost, and probably most importantly, for all you Bigfoot enthusiasts out there, his name's Atwell, Dave Atwell. But
he's
no,
my favorite.
So, I'm going to be doing Florence Comic Con in what, a little under 2 weeks, not this weekend, but the next.
About 10 days.
I don't have the dates in front of me. Okay, awesome. I'll be there down
September
there at 10th. Florence Comic Con. Right. And then, let's see. Oh, my goodness. I've got a book coming out this week, I believe. I believe it's the Zenoscope Grim Fairy Tales Armed Forces edition. It's got all your favorite Grim Fairy Tales characters in there, pinups of them wearing the Armed Forces tribute to the troops. I did the Tinkerbell illustration in there, so y'all check that out. And, gosh, I've got so many cons coming up. I don't know which is first. See, when Misty's not standing here next to me, I kind of, you know how that, you guys know how that is. So,
Misty's awesome.
Yeah, a bunch of cons on the way. Yes, she is. She is my brain. So,
well, as long as she's not your right hand that draws, you're okay. Or are you left handed? I can't remember.
I'm right-handed.
Okay, all right. But we're glad you got Misty to keep things organized, and that's wonderful. So thanks. And when I come up, absolutely, and I'm going to be coming through there on, I think, September 17th or 18th to go up to Kingsport to work on Bigfoot Day, which we will officially being announcing either tomorrow or Monday. I will drop by, and I hope to purchase a copy of that from you and get an autograph. Do you think that can happen?
Awesome. Oh, you know it will happen.
Cool.
Good, good. Well, thank you. We will coordinate that. Now, I've got to plug some very important guests coming up. First of all, next week, we're actually going to have a double show because I'm going to have to do a remote recording of Tornado Bait, Mississippi McQueen, and Dave Atwell and Papa Stroh. It's going to be on Labor Day night. So if you can join us, good. If not, don't worry about it. We'd love to have you because we will relive our time from Steampunk Mid-Atlantic. And then we're going to broadcast that show on Thursday night after our live Comic-Con Stars, which we will have Sam Deloach, who will teach us how to go search for Bigfoot. Dave Atwell, I'm doing this just for you because we love you so much. Sam Deloach.
Bring the glow stick.
No, it's not that at all, and it's quite interesting. We talked today. You're going to like it. The next week we have Michael Cook, who is a huge cryptid researcher, and he's got a book.
Cool.
He's got a show. He's going to be a lot of fun. And I talked with him today, and we talked for 50 minutes until I had to get to the pier. So it was great.
Cool.
It's going to be a lot of fun. And then the next week out, I want everybody to listen. We will have on the show Anna Nicole Smith.
Sweet. Dude, that's a major get. That's awesome.
And Bigfoot.
That isn't. Thank you, Greg Bowe, for taking that in the spirit in which it was given. What if I told you that we're going to have somebody who might be equally as famous as Anna Nicole Smith? I'm working on it, okay?
I think that's
awesome. Dave, if Anna shows up, you better watch out. You will have lost a $1 bet, buddy. And
you'll have nothing to worry about because they'll be breaking the paddles out on me.
So anyway,
all you hear is clear.
So we're going to have a great time on Comic-Con Stars. I've had, you know, my three favorite people in the world to have on this show. We got two of them here tonight. We miss Papa Stroh. He is, of course, detained in a cage, so it'd be hard for him to get here. But thanks to Dave Atwell, who's with us every week. Thanks to Greg Bill Watson, who we want to keep on here
rock
more often because he has interesting things to say. We'll see
rock
everybody. I guess the first time I will see everybody in person live will be CryptoCon in Charlotte. Now, September the 30th, Papa Stroh Maestro will be doing his famous Q&A at Sticky Fingers Rib House. That's what it's called now. We're going to have a great time at that. And then Sunday is CryptoCon. I'm going to have some announcements about some new guests, and there'll be some fun guests, very family-friendly, and a lot of good times. So I want to thank two of my favorite
That'd
people
be a good
to have
idea.
On the show. I want to thank Yeah, we'll try to be family friendly. We've got to be. We got to be, you know, we got to be nice people because there aren't a lot of good people left in the world. Going to be. So thanks so much to Dave Atwell. Dave, thank you.
Yes, sir.
Thank you. Dave.
Thank you. Always a pleasure.
And Greg Bo Watson, thank you very much.
Hey, John,
and
real quick before we go off the air, if you don't mind, I just want to give a quick hats off to those folks in Houston and wish them all the best. And I got to say this, is that in 4 foot of water, those folks in Houston show true American pride and true American spirit, unlike in other cities that can't behave themselves on a nice sunny afternoon. So hats off.
Very well
said. Yeah, all my best to those folks in Houston that are that have lost everything but yet are pulling together. And like I said, being true Americans. So God bless them all.
Amen.
Absolutely. And we've also got to extend our prayers to the residents of Port Arthur, Texas, which is completely underwater now. And
that's
a smaller town, smaller area. We don't know how lucky we are to have had Tropical Storm Irma just come blowing through here and leave. So all of our best to them, and we will, of course, Comic-Con Stars is going to participate in some type of a fundraiser. We'll be figuring that out here in the next couple weeks. And I want to thank you folks for thank you, Greg Bo. I was going to ask you, we've got to do something. We've got to help. And we will do
whatever
what
we
can.
Do.
So getting a conference call with the four of us. We'll decide what we can do, and we'll do it because I think it's important. So Comic-Con Stars will always be on the list for having helped Houston and Port Arthur. So I want to thank both of you for being here tonight. It's been a blast. We'll see everybody next week. We'll have Tornado Bait, Mississippi McQueen, and we'll have another special guest, which will be a lot of fun. And so stay tuned. We'll see you next week. Thanks to Comic-Con Stars. Thank you, Greg Bo. Thank you, Dave. And we'll see you next week. Cheers.
All right, guys.
Yes, sir. Y'all have a good night. Be safe. And look out for Bigfoot if he shows up.